In contrast to some of the other people who are running very excellent research programs like Bob and Lon and others here, I've been more of a person in extension reacting to wireworm problems that we've seen in the field in New Jersey. And this all started about 1992 when we started having, to me it seemed like an increase in the number of cornfields that were having distinct wireworm problems. So what I'm offering here today is kind of a summary of a lot of these observations, problems that we've had, and I have probably driven Paul Johnson a little crazy over the years with emails requesting information and comparing notes with him. So in New Jersey we have a few wireworm species, not as many as in Alaska and Idaho and so on, but our primary one is Melanotus communis. This is a wireworm species that occurs pretty much over the entire state, although it seems to be most abundant in the southern part. It goes after the corn, sweet corn, potatoes, sweet potatoes, and carrots primarily. And you've seen damage slides here from the earlier talk, so this is nothing particularly new here. But would like to point out that the holes here are from the wireworms entering into the potato tubers and in the field corn. Sometimes it's very difficult to see the damage that the wireworm has caused on a plant. When you dig the plant up and you start looking for what's the reason here? Was it a disease? Was it possibly a white grub, or was it a wireworm? Sometimes it's very, very difficult to find the hole where the wireworm entered. And in, let's see, where's the cursor? There it is. Okay. Right here is the entry hole into the growing point of the corn seedling plant. And once that growing point is killed, the corn plant is done for. All right, so the Melanotus communis is what you would probably call the archetypical wireworm. It's a reddish brown coloration, long, slender insect. Besides the Melanotus communis, we have these other species that have picked up over the years. Limonius dubitans have found this almost exclusively in wheat and in corn. It's relatively common, but doesn't begin to approach the numbers that we find with the Melanotus communis. Aeolus malellus is a small wireworm species, and in contrast to the others, it has a white body as opposed to a reddish-brown body. The only place I have found this is in corn, and it's only an occasional specimen. By far, probably the least encountered species that I've found here in the fields in New Jersey. Agrius mancus, we have only one place where we have found this in New Jersey, and it was at the research farm, the Rutgers Research Farm in northern New Jersey. Our horticulturalist was looking at potato varieties, planted a virgin piece of ground at the research farm, went to harvest the potatoes, and was coming up with over 100 puncture wounds from wireworms on the tubers. This prompted a quick study of the mancus there at the research farm, but after about 2 years the population disappeared, and subsequent trapping and planting of potatoes yielded nothing. Hemicropetius mannonius, this has been noted as a potential corn pest, but so far in New Jersey, out of all the different times I've collected this and looked in the fields for the damage, I have not seen it ever feeding on corn. The only time I've seen it feeding on plant material is at a vegetable farm where bell peppers were being grown. The drop fruit on the ground would form a moisture column underneath in the sandy soil, and the Hemicropetius wireworms were coming up that moisture column and feeding on the dropped peppers that were on the ground. Otherwise, I would agree with Paul's evaluation of the Semicropidius in that it's zoophagous. I collected several of these in one container. It was a couple of days later before I got back to them, and there was only one wireworm in the container. So, the Conodaris lividus, I've seen literature where this is implicated as a crop pest. We can pick it up on our black light trap system that the vegetable IPM runs, program runs in the state, but I have not yet seen any indication of crop damage in any of the different crops in the state. The first four species listed there, as mentioned, they were listed as probable corn pests in the Riley-Keister publication in 1979. And as I said, so far I haven't seen any problems with the Hemicropedius or Conodaris in New Jersey. One thing I have noticed, though, is where we find the Melanotus communis in the field, we don't find Limonius dubitans within that same area. They may split up the field, and in one case we had Melanotus communis inhabiting muck soil, and in the lighter ground, low organic, we had Limonius dubitans, but we did not find either specimen on the opposite side of the field. And this has occurred in a couple of other instances. There seems to be some sort of exclusionary pact between them. I'm not really sure why that is sorted out that way. Okay, the importance of Melanotus communis then. It is the most important wireworm for us. We can find it everywhere in the state. We collect adults Melanotus everywhere in our blacklight traps. And I would say that of the crop problems that we've had, at least 99% of them are due to communis. The Limonius dubitans, sometimes we can see it in some numbers in wheat, damaging tillers, but almost all of it, the major crop loss is due to communis. Typically, there's two scenarios. We'll either have fields where there is year after year, there's a small proportion of plants that are killed, light damage, maybe up to 5 to 7% of the corn plants, for example. And then in other years, we have devastating loss, where just all of a sudden, for no apparent reason, we have a large crop loss in the field, either corn, potatoes, sweet potatoes. So it's really difficult to predict what's going on here. And crops fed upon. Communis has been found feeding on most of the crops grown in New Jersey. Between myself and Jerry Gadu, the vegetable entomologist, we've compared notes, and he has observations from across a wide variety of vegetable crops that have been damaged by wireworms, probably by communis. And the only crop that I have seen that seems to be relatively immune to depredation by communists is soybeans. Field planted to soybeans after a large infestation of communists showed no damage, no dead plants, no injured seeds, and so on. So corn and potatoes, sweet potatoes, are the most likely crops in New Jersey to be damaged. Wireworms are listed as secondary pests in a number of crop profiles from the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic states. White potatoes, sweet potatoes, field corn, sweet corn, processing carrots, and peanuts are among the crops that list wireworms and as probably crops are having wireworms as secondary pests. The wireworm species in these crop profiles are often not really indicated, so I'm assuming that some of this, at least, is based on communis. And it does point up one fact that that doesn't help us in trying to get on top of the biology of the wireworms, because there is a tendency for people to ignore the different species of wireworms and simply call all species as wireworms and treat them as a single entity. And as Paul pointed out earlier, this really can't be done if you're going to really advance work on the biology of the different species. It just doesn't payout. Okay, so for many of our crops, though, probably commonness is a secondary pest. And in the case of field corn or sweet corn, if I were out looking for the damage, of course, you'd start looking for the plants that appear wilted, like they're under a moisture stress. This symptom indicates there's something going on with the roots, whether it's wireworm, white grub, or something, disease even. So this is our signal, of course, and then you dig it up and you determine whether it was really wireworm or not. There is a second type of damage, though, that I think has gone largely overlooked. And that's the yellow striping that you see in the leaf in this plant here. The yellowing usually appears on the edge of the leaf and typically goes all the way down to the point where it comes up out of the sheath here on the stem of the corn plant. I've dug up any number of these, and what it appears is that the wireworm has attempted to feed on the plant and may have fed for only a brief time and then backed off and moved on. The plant wasn't killed, but yet it was injured to the point that that you have this yellow coloration in the leaf, and I found that oftentimes these plants will not mature. That is, they won't grow tall. Sometimes they won't even produce ears. And I think this is an additional damage of caused by wireworms that's been largely overlooked. I did have a study. We had a small 3-acre cornfield that had a significant wireworm population in it. I went out and marked all the plants looking like this. And as luck would have it, the farmer came in about 2 days before I was going to go out and evaluate the stand and cut all the corn off for silage. So I'm still pending on another study looking at that. In processing carrots, we see them as probably more like secondary pests as opposed to a primary pest. And here's a carrot that has split as it's been growing in the carrot field. When carrots are under duress, moisture duress, it hasn't rained, the farmers aren't able to irrigate the carrots, they will slow down in their growth. And then with a sudden onset of rain and all, their carrots will take up the water to the point that they will actually split because they've taken up so much water and the root is expanding so much that it splits open. And as dramatic as this split here is in the carrot, this would, if left alone, this would heal up. And by harvest time, most likely you wouldn't see much of anything here except just kind of a ripple in the side of the carrot. Unfortunately, when this happens, if wireworms are present, they will move into the interior of the carrot and begin feeding in that interior tissue. And when that happens, this is the sort of situation you wind up with, holes and dead necrotic tissue up and down the length of the carrot. And of course, here's the obligatory melanotis wireworm sitting inside the center part of the carrot. So this is wireworms can aggravate conditions that are already pre-existing in the crop. Paul has already talked about recognizing the different species of melanotis and the others. One thing that I have found interesting with the melanotis that we have in New Jersey is that in the species description, everything matches up except for these stridulatory patches here on the ninth abdominal tergite. In the species description, there are 7 to 12 ridges in these patches here, but in our species, I can only get 4. And this was corroborated by Kim Stoner in Connecticut, who saw the same thing with the melanotis specimens that she had, which leads me to wonder if we're not looking at some sort of a strain, subspecies, and so on. If that's the case, what implications are there in terms of its of the wireworm's behavior and food preferences? It's probably moot, but yet it makes you wonder if there's any morphological change would reflect in any behavioral change in the insect. In terms of biology, This is really astounding. And again, I've probably burned up the keys on the keyboard, sending emails to Paul and wondering what the heck is going on here. Despite recognizing that Melanotus communis has been a pest for 100 plus or minus years, it is astounding what we don't know about this insect in terms of its biology. And even the matter of how long a time does it really spend in its larval stages is in question. And my one fear is that with the advent of new insecticidal chemistries, it's going to take the pressure off of looking at the biology that much more. And I fear that if we are successful in getting new chemistries and all, that seem to work for at least now anyway, that very little is going to be done on the biology. And maybe that's just being prudent. After all, the most basic management question from a farmer is, how do I kill them? They're not impressed. They may say, wow, this is really neat, you know, the biology and life cycle is the thing, but the bottom line is, how do I kill it? How do I preserve my crop? In terms of soils, found Melanotus communis infesting sandy soil, clay loam, muck, and something between clay and marl. It does not seem to have any particular preference, although in South Jersey, most of our soils are a sandy loam. And so that's the most frequent place we find them, but they can occur in large concentrations in a variety of soil types. In the heavier soils, I'd almost consider them beneficial in that they help aerate the soil. And I've noticed over the years in pulling up bait traps that I can almost estimate whether I'm going to find a lot or few wireworms based on how many holes and all I see in the soil as I'm digging up the baits. The larvae respond to soil moisture levels and will not inhabit dry soil. I've tried using bait traps in midsummer when I thought maybe there was sufficient soil moisture, only to discover that the seeds never germinated, never gotten any wireworm larvae in those situations. Observations from other people seem to indicate that we have more damage in dry years on potatoes and sweet potatoes, probably larvae looking for moisture. Sampling, have relied heavily on grain bait traps, but we also have tried using shovels and just simply going out and digging around fields where you're planning on planting potatoes or corn. All of this is hit and miss. We really need kind of a better system, if possible, for sampling for them. One thing I've noticed with Melanotus communis is that once a field is infested, it seems to remain that way. Even before I showed up in New Jersey, there was a field that one of our county agents had indicated had a population of communis in it. I went out 8 years later, went to the part of the field they talked about, and there the wireworms were sitting and doing very well. I've been looking at cover crop sampling, going out at the end of the growing season, and where the farmers have been putting in cover crops, grain, barley and wheat especially. You look for the damaged tillers. The tillers show up as this yellowed, damaged plant here, and you can go around and at least get an idea of the feeding activity of the wireworms, and frequently you can pull up this tiller and find the wireworm feeding in the shaft of the tiller. It's not precise by any means, but I've encouraged the potato farmers, if you have the opportunity, go out on a sunny afternoon in November and walk the field and see how many of these damaged tillers you see. If you see a lot of them, you probably ought to avoid the field. In southern New Jersey, all these green W's indicate the fields where we've had significant wireworm populations. And the people in Woodstown would probably like to know that they're in the wireworm capital for New Jersey. This field, the Hitchener Field, is the field where it just really tells us how little we really know about the wireworms. In this farm, it's a dairy farm, we have four fields that receive the same treatment. Continuous corn silage receives dairy manure. Fields are tilled, planted to rye cover crops. This field here had significant wireworm populations, whereas the yellow fields did not. We geo-referenced these points in the field in a random sampling scheme and tracked this over the years. All right, thank you. And we started sampling in the fall of November 98, then in the spring of 99, fall of 99, and spring of 2000. And you can see the wireworm number totals increased significantly, and we came to over 10 per trap in the May of 2000. And the generally accepted action threshold is one wireworm per trap. We stopped at this point. I would have loved to continue doing this kind of sampling, but the farmer got fed up buying soil insecticide to protect the corn and converted this field into alfalfa. And I was unable to keep on working with it. All right, so in summary, this is a very frustrating insect to work with. It's been difficult to get any handle on biological information. We still don't know why and how it shows up in different locations. And Paul has told me that they feed on plants only when they're under stress. Well, I guess New Jersey is a very stressful place because they seem quite willing to bite on our crop plants frequently. All right.
There's time for one question.
Yeah.
Is this the type of crop that that's going to make the worst fireworm problems in falling year in general?
I think the, I'm not sure that it would necessarily make it worse.